Hi. Wow, that was fast. We went super live. Hey, so I went live early, even though Veronica isn't here. Oh, and now she's slacking us.
Uh-oh.
Audio is live when you do get in. So I went live because I wanted to tell this story about, I use Audio Hijack to record the show, and I had this weird problem happen where, if you've never used Audio Hijack, you probably don't know that you have all these modules. So it's very visual. Like, I have a module for the browser and a module for the output device and a module for the input device and a module for the recorder. And so it can all flow in and be recorded. And that's one of the ways I can record Roger's audio without hearing it, without hearing my own audio echoing in my head, because I put the input device going straight into the recorder, but the browser that Roger's coming in on through the output device into the recorder. Anyway, long way of saying, I had these little modules on a screen, and what had happened was the recorder module somehow got nudged off the screen. So you couldn't see it anymore. Like, even if you scrolled all the way right in the little display, you couldn't see the recorder module anymore. And I could not figure out any way to get to it. So I went onto Rogue Amoeba's website, and I filed a ticket and said, hey, I have this problem. And within 24 hours, they sent back a response that said, oh, okay, we've seen this before, and we're hoping to fix it in a future update. In the meantime, you know, one thing you could do is just select all and delete them and then rebuild it. And I was like, oh, man, I don't want to do that. They even were like, you could select all and then shift unselect the ones that you are visible and then just press delete and it'll delete the recorder and then you can re-add it. And I was like, yeah, but I don't want to do that because I have all my settings in there and the way the file name records and all that. So, but then the response continued and said, or you can try moving all of your modules over to the side near the one that's off, press select all, and then you should be able to drag them all to the left. And it worked. So I did edit, select all, or you could do Command A. And then I just grabbed one of them that I could see, pulled them all to the left, and the recorder module showed back up again. Hooray!
Cool.
So it was just one of those rare situations where you had a bug and then you couldn't figure out how to fix it, and you asked the company and they gave you an effective solution. I was like, oh, shoot, I should have thought of that. Like, I didn't even think about selecting all and dragging things around. That's perfect.
Pretty sweet.
I'm very excited. I know. It's probably more excited than anyone else listening to this story.
It's,
I just, if you don't care about the actual problem like I do, I just think it's a good example of, you know, support working. It can happen. What were you going to say, Roger?
No, it's one of those tools that's kind of, I wouldn't say intimidating, but it's kind of confusing the first time out. But once you get it,
it's less intimidating than it used to be because they have this visual interface, right? Like, once you learn what the modules are, it's really easy. It's way easier than it used to be to plug everything in because you can see it laid out in front of you.
Hello. How's it going?
Good. You look festive with your... Is that a scarf or a sweater top?
It's a scarf.
Yeah.
It's freezing in here.
I was just telling Roger a tale about getting actual support from a software company that worked and solved my problem. Yeah.
Good for you.
I know.
Something's rubbing on your mic, Veronica? No.
Unless I'm not set to the right microphone.
Shake your head again, or did rub, I think.
No, I'm...
Now you're out of sync.
Now you're in my... Oh, yeah, I can't say anything, because...
We're live.
Live with audio.
What were you going to say?
Now live Veronica.
What horrible thing were you going to say?
What horrors?
Oh, I haven't assigned our headlines yet. I always try to assign them so you don't have to say anything that's really, like, difficult.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for hand-holding me. I appreciate it.
Oh, stop.
Is it because I'm a woman, Tom?
Is yes, that what you're... it is. I'm white knighting you on the pronunciation of foreign names.
God damn it, Tom.
Oh, I just tried to set you up for success.
You're a little laggy on my end.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll fix itself.
Yes, it definitely always gets better when we go live.
You're in a feisty mood.
Yeah.
What are you saying?
Did you get coffee?
I'm fine, thank you.
All right. So the only one that's tricky that you should make sure to look at is number on line 18. This is a lot of numbers.
Okay.
And it's M-Pesa is how you say that. You probably know that, but just in case. What's Darren Kitchen still doing in our dock?
Get out of there, Darren Kitchen.
Get out of the kitchen. How's that thing go?
Darren just doesn't belong in the kitchen. Is that what you're saying, Crouch?
What are you insinuating?
Don't go to the kitchen. Did you eat lunch?
Your logic compels me.
Yes.
B vitamins.
Not gonna lie, I had a little crying episode this morning over Django. She's not doing well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She's having a hard time standing up.
Oh, puppy.
And she wants to play fetch.
Oh.
And I'm like, she's like, that's fine. I can just lay here and you throw it in my mouth. And I'm like, okay, we'll do that. That's yours.
You can do that.
So I did that for about 10 minutes for a
puppy baby.
Yeah.
She's a good girl.
She is. She has a much harder time on the hardwood floor right now, so we have rugs everywhere. And then she'll go and she'll find a spot of hardwood floor and lay down on it and then start whining because she can't get back up.
Well, why does she like the hardwood?
I think it just feels good because it's cool. You
know? Yeah. Yeah, Bodega likes a cool floor.
Yeah.
Hardwood. If she's hot.
It's not like it's hot today or anything, though.
Yeah.
It's foggy where I'm at. It's misty.
Oh, and it is here, too, where I'm at, because we're in the same general region.
Well, we are 30 minutes away from each other.
When you said that, I immediately was like, oh, yeah, Veronica and Roger have the same weather. And then I'm like, oh, not anymore.
Not anymore.
Although, Roger, you're going to be hotter than I am because you're farther inland.
I'm always hotter.
Well, there is that.
That's objective.
It is.
I am jealous that you guys get Ellie time.
Well, I had some Ellie time yesterday.
Ellie dinner time. She looks sassy.
She is. She walks all over the place now. Like, she's just... And if she doesn't, if she physically can't get there, she wants you to carry her like a like royalty. And then she'll point.
Like some kind of baby.
Yeah, and then she'll point like where she wants to go. You just kind of take her there. You're like a manservant. But in fact, I'm just her father, which is like a manservant.
Mm-hmm.
I dropped a link out of the rundown somehow, so I'm going to find it now. The one about graphene. We got a graphene story today. Graphene
so
alert.
I put in a link from NPR for that story for the. Should I put that in there?
You put that in your own? Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
That works. There are three links you could use. There's an Engadget link, which I just found and put in there. There is the NPR link, which the Engadget story links to, and then there's the actual article at the journal Science.
Yeah, which is really hard to understand unless you
Well, you don't it's get the, you don't get the whole article. Yeah. But yeah, yeah. So here, yeah, I'll put in the NPR one there. That's fine. Fixed. We have fun stories today, Veronica.
Yay.
And then a really heavy discussion. We can have fun with the stories.
All those kid songs.
Wait, how do I... How do I add? Why don't I see the email thing I like to have in this notifications bar? Why doesn't Spark show up in my notifications sidebar? Why? Does it have to be a special thing to show up there?
I don't understand the words you're saying in those that order.
You okay?
Somebody's gonna turn that in their ringtone now. Actually, I want to do that. I want to make that the ringtone for when you call me.
You would think it would be like Sawyer growling at you. You wouldn't answer the phone. You don't answer the phone anywhere.
Oh my gosh! So we put a. It's kind of true. I don't really answer the phone. If I see it's from someone I know, I answer. We put a drop cam upstairs so we can see the dogs when we're not here. So I turned it on when I came downstairs just to see what they do. And Sawyer was in the chair he's not supposed to be in. He immediately got up there. So, because there's two chairs he can get up on. There's two chairs. One he can get up on, the other he's not supposed to. So I turned on the mic and I was like, Sawyer, off. And he got off. And
yeah, that's what around. That's bodega.
And then Django got up and left the room. She's like,
I'm not interested in this big brother state.
Yes.
Yeah, we have a Nest cam. We have a Nest cam for bodega when she's at home, when we're not there. And I can talk to her too. I do the same thing. I tell her to go to bed. And she's so funny.
Yeah.
She does. She looks around like, where are you? I don't understand.
Yeah, yeah. Django has never responded to that stuff. Like when we've tried to talk to her over the phone or whatever, but Sawyer always does. He's like, well, you're a disembodied voice.
That's
funny. I don't know what you're saying. We did the motion capture, like turn on for motion capture when we were gone last night over to Rogers. And when we came back, we looked to see. And it was mostly just like, oh, you know, one of them got up and moved position. But then we caught one where he was on the couch. So apparently this whole time he gets up on furniture he's not supposed to when we're gone, but then gets
That's
off
funny.
Before we come home.
Yeah, or as he hears it coming up. Our motion sensor has been catching the same woman and her dog peeing on the side of our house every day.
Wait, what?
Our outdoor camera.
No, but like
the dog house, or the woman also?
Just the dog.
All right.
But like, I don't know what to say to her. Like, I know where she lives. I see her out and about with the dog. We're friendly.
Well, I mean, so
right,
what
right
the problem?
Passive,
the problem is that she's peeing on your actual house. Wall,
right.
Not just on the sidewalk. Yeah, that's probably.
It's just in the. It's on the stairs, so like you like step and pee like when you're coming out of the house.
Write a note.
I think that's what I would. The way I'd approach it is be like, hey, you know, believe me, I've got a dog. I know how hard it is to find a good place to pee. But when your dog pees here, it's not nice.
Also, it encourages other dogs to pee there.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how to say it without sounding confrontational.
I'm telling
you like to step in pee?
No, I don't want to write a note. That's like passive aggressive. What?
You got to start by assuming, even if it's not true, that the person doesn't realize that it's a problem. Like they're like that they will say, "Oh, I didn't even think about that. Of course, how stupid of me. I will stop." And then that always helps me figure out a nicer way to say things.
No, it's because I had a note stuffed in my car door, handle of my car door.
For what? What'd you do?
I parked on the street a little closer to the person's house than they felt comfortable.
They wrote, his people in his neighborhood wrote a, hey, can you try not to park in front of other people's houses? It keeps it free for them and their visitors. We're live on video, Roger.
Yeah.
Is this in LA or San Francisco?
This is in LA.
Oh. You know what? No, I'm sorry.
Is that he is in like an area with immense number of parking spots.
You will not ever go. You will never go into parking poverty in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. If you do not get to claim the spot in front of your house, it's public parking. It's
although
like street
parking.
Although
the note was written, it said, if you can, try not to do that. I think that's okay.
Was it near your house?
It's next to my house.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. That's baloney. I don't buy that. People try to pull that in my neighborhood in San Francisco, and people lose it on next door.
I don't mind. Like the person who lives behind me, when we first showed up, said, hey, try to keep the space clear. This is where I park because it's, you know, easier for me to bring groceries and stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, that's fine. If it's try to keep it clear, that's fine.
But, you know, these are the same people who complain about this stuff that have garages full of junk.
Yeah. Well, my neighbor doesn't have a garage. She doesn't even have a driveway to her place. Her only way is from that parking spot. That's different than, yeah, like what Roger's talking about, where it's like everyone in your neighborhood.
Stick to two rules of city parking. One, never block someone's driveway or else I'm going to come at you to the full extent of the parking law. Or two, don't park in the same spot for more than 72 hours. Like, you have to move your car. Our street is not your parking lot. Unless you're like going to be away and you tell. We don't have street cleaning. We don't have street cleaning.
That's to have what kind
of. So people park in our neighborhood and leave their car there and then take an Uber to the airport.
Well, because you don't have street cleaning, man. That's a bonanza. I'd do that too.
Well, I park in the street because my driveway is filled with a trailer at the moment.
At the moment, yeah. It's fine.
But I mean, it's not like I leave it there all day. I drive, you know. But I just come back around to my house.
This is a weird thing. This is like a weird phenomenon I've discovered being a homeowner in San Francisco. It was like the drama, the parking drama.
Oh, yeah. Well, I even had it as a renter. I know you did a little bit too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Shall we get going?
Sure.
All right. Here we. Of course, I'm about to sneeze right before I want to start. Here we go. Daily Tech News Show is powered by its audience, not outside organizations. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, December 12th, 2016. I'm Tom Merritt. Joining me, Veronica Belmont is back in the saddle again. How is your week shaping up, Veronica?
It's Monday. Too soon to say, Tom.
You're supposed to say it's a vista of opportunity and grandeur.
I don't have enough data points, Tom. Need more
like
data.
A true product manager there. We don't have enough data points yet, but we're optimistic.
Mm-hmm. But the shareholders are on board. Shareholders are on board.
Oh, good. That's always a positive.
All the stakeholders. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
We're going to talk about a couple of things. Twitch put out a new moderation tool that uses machine learning. There's an article in Bloomberg about IMSI, which is trying to create a positive community. We're going to talk about, can you actually create a troll-free social network in a little bit. But first, Instagram started rolling out live broadcasting in the U.S. to its stories function Monday. So there's something Snapchat didn't have that they added.
There you go. That's a thing.
Microsoft claims more people are switching from Mac to Surface than ever before because its trade-in program for MacBooks was its best ever. No numbers here, though. This is all just anecdotal. Now here are some more top stories. Apple's TV app is out for the iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV Monday. To get it, you need to update to iOS 10.2 or tvOS 10.1. Once you update on Apple TV, it'll just show up where the music app used to be. Music app gets bumped down a row. In iOS, it will replace your videos app that you used to have. The app tracks shows you're watching, sends you into the right service to watch shows, and it can send you into the right spot on a partially watched episode and notify you when a new episode is available. It makes recommendations of what to watch, although not yet based on viewing habits, just sort of general curated recommendations. HBO and Hulu, CW, all work with the new TV app. Significantly, Netflix does not. Recode's Peter Kafka does point out that Netflix works with the Xfinity X1 box guide. that lets you track your shows. So this is this crazy world where Netflix is cooperating with Comcast and not Apple on something.
I would like to be a fly on the wall for those meetings wherein they decided not to work with Apple for whatever reason, or the meetings between Netflix and Apple. It'll probably come soon, though, I would imagine.
Yeah, it seems like each one of these things needs to be negotiated. My guess is it's about access, you know, to particular information, so you can have that deep link right into an episode and go right to where you left off and things like that. Netflix probably may be protective about some of that. They may be protective about the user recommendation part of that situation. They may be negotiating on that. I would assume Netflix wants to be a part of this. They just haven't quite got the agreement that they want.
I agree. I'm sure. Why would they not want to be a part of it, frankly?
Yeah.
Moving on, though, National Geographic's Facebook page will be the first to publish a Facebook live stream in 360 degrees on Monday. It will show the emergence of scientists from 80 days of isolation in pods at Utah's Mars Desert Research Station. Later this month, Facebook Live 360 broadcasting will become an option in the Facebook Live's API. Facebook plans to roll it out to all pages and users next year.
Okay, this is one where I'm split. I like the idea that I will have functionality, even if as a page user I have to wait till next year. That's fine. I also don't know if I'll ever make use of this. Like, live streaming 360 always sounds better than it looks.
I feel like, don't we know someone who shot something for them? I don't know if we're supposed to talk about that, or maybe that's something that's going to happen later. But anyway, I think I like to watch these things, but I don't know if I really need to broadcast in them. So I think that would be fun, though. I'm excited to see some of the National Geographic stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this is interesting. The scientists who are doing the Mars isolation simulation, I will be. Mm-hmm. It'll be fun to see them come out. And I guess they've come out at this point today, but I might watch that later on. Do I need to see it in 360? I mean, I don't want to trash 360 because there are definitely places where this will be useful. I just think those places are much more limited than your normal live broadcasting. I don't know that seeing scientists come out of the isolation pods benefits a lot from 360 view.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I do enjoy the photos. When I see people taking photos and publishing photos in 360 or in something similar to that, the panoramic kind of views, I do really enjoy that. So maybe it'll be fun to see in video form as well.
Yeah,
you
need to think of things where it's beneficial to see everything. Like
underwater would be cool.
Yeah, Big Jim in the chat room is like, what, you don't want to live stream DTNS in 360? It's like, you don't really need to. Like, you barely need DTNS in video at all, to be frank. You don't need to see behind me to enjoy this, but if there was a concert maybe and you wanted to have an on-stage viewpoint, mm-hmm. Or there's like the Aurora Borealis or the middle of the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, underwater.
Yeah,
underwater.
Yeah.
That'd definitely be rad.
All right. Panasonic is developing a retail checkout system that will scan items as you put them in your basket and then automatically bag for you at checkout. The basket detects tags, so you're going to have to tag everything in the store. It's not quite as whiz-bang as the Amazon Go convenience store. But as you put them in the basket, the basket rings you up and tracks the item cost. And then there's a trap door in the basket, so that when you put it down to check out, it will open the trapdoor, pull the things out of your basket, and bag them for you. And if you haven't already guessed, this system is being tried out in public in Japan at a Lawson convenience store near the Panasonic headquarters in Osaka.
I love Lawson's.
Lawson's pretty good. I mean, I actually kind of partial to 7-Eleven in Japan. As crazy as that may sound to people in America who know 7-Eleven. But
no, Lawson's the best.
Lawson's pretty good.
7-Eleven's pretty good, too.
I think this is not going to come to other Lawson's anytime soon. It's kind of an experimental thing because it's near the Panasonic headquarters. But I wish this had been there when I was in Japan, because I would have totally wanted to try this out. And
I would have gone there.
If you've never been in the Japanese convenience stores, they're small and you just carry one of those little hand baskets. So this is perfect for that. I'm not sure it works so well in our big U.S. grocery stores with our huge carts and everything.
And our giant food and
yes.
big stuff. Ugh, we're the worst. But yes, I this is kind of like a nice to have. I don't know if it's much of a game changer. I'd rather just have the Amazon system and walk out.
Yeah.
Put it in my own bag and walk out.
Obviously has it all, right? Like I just walk around the store, grab my stuff and walk out. This is the next step before that though, and maybe easier to implement because you don't need as many cameras and computer vision sensors.
Think big, Tom, just go for it.
I know.
No halfway steps.
But if I can get it, look, if Ralph's will put this in place, and it can't afford the whole Amazon Go system, I'll take this upgrade of all I have to do is put my cart down and pay and leave, mm-hmm. rather than go, we have notified an attendant to assist you because the kale didn't scan. Like, I hate that.
I'm so happy. I finally remember way back when Apple Pay first launched for like your phone and watch. I could never get it to work. I finally have gotten it down, and my life is so much better.
I use it at the dog store, the pet food store near my house all the time, and yet nowhere else that I shop generally takes it. So weird.
My Walgreens takes it now. My grocery store takes it now. So everything, all the places I shop the most are accepting it, and it's actually been very convenient. Anyway, in a preview update, Skype Translator now supports audio translation on calls made from Skype to mobile phones and landlines. The preview is available to Windows Insiders on Windows 10. Skype Translator currently supports 10 languages with real-time translation, including Arabic, Chinese, and Portuguese.
This is the universal translator is getting closer and closer.
It's the babblefish.
Yeah. I mean, Skype Translate is a little bit like instant messaging in voice because you have to say it and then it translates and says it to the other person and then they say their thing back. So it's real time because you don't have to put it through a machine. Like it's scanning you in real time, but there's a bit of a delay, right? On the other hand, the fact that it works at all is impressive. And now I don't have to call someone on Skype to do this. I can talk to anyone on any phone line. Just I have to be on Skype. That's crazy.
What are Windows Insiders?
Oh, that's the beta program. Anybody can sign up for that. And and then you're a Windows Insider and you can get the builds, like the Windows Creators Update. You can get the builds of those as they come. It's essentially just beta testing stuff.
Cool.
In the journal Science, scientists describe how they have mixed the highly viscoelastic polymers that you call silly putty with graphene to make a composite material that makes an excellent heart monitor, among other things. Silly putty's rate of flow varies based on force, not temperature, if you've never played with it before. That's why those of you who have played with it before know that it can bounce from a low height, but shatters with a sharp blow, like if you throw it 90 miles an hour against the garage door. Well, not 90
miles. I didn't know it shatters.
Yeah. Yeah. If you hit it with a hammer, it'll shatter. That sensitivity, though, combined with graphene's conductivity, can make a very sensitive sensor, these scientists have found out. Just a bit of this material, the composite material in a person's throat, right by the carotid artery, can measure heart rate and blood pressure. And the scientists in their paper in Science say it can even detect the impact of the footsteps of a small spider.
At your throat.
Well, or not, either way.
Oh, those are two separate
things.
Those sentences.
Are two separate things, yeah. Although they could be combined, I'm certain.
Silly putty is an amazing scientific breakthrough.
I mean, just the idea that you can track spider footsteps with silly putty.
So yeah, so basically I read another article on this and they're saying that they can really start to use it in fitness trackers and health trackers and wearable devices. So this is kind of could be the next interesting step in that space.
Oh yeah.
And it's silly putty.
There's a lot of people who make big criticisms of fitness trackers because the heart rate monitor is not very accurate. Mm-hmm. And most people say, yeah, it's accurate enough for me to tell, like, was my heart rate way up or way down? But if you want to use it in medical situations, it may not be accurate enough, you know, for a doctor to make a good recommendation. This kind of sensitivity could change that. And like you say, it's silly putty.
And that's fun. And yeah. We like that.
You can also open up your tracker and copy comics out of the newspaper with
it. Perfect. God, that was so cool. It does start to get a little like brown and gross after a while. Yeah. Like there's nothing better than a fresh tub of silly putty. Mm-hmm. Anyway, a study published Friday in the journal Science found that M-Pesa helped 2% of Kenyan households out of poverty between 2008 and 2014. M-Pesa lets users send and receive money through their mobile phones. The study also credits M-Pesa with making the Kenyan economy more efficient. Kenya is expected to finish 2016 with 6% growth. Safaricom reported half-year profits of 23.9 billion Kenyan shillings, or about 234 million US dollars, and about 25% of total revenue came from M-Pesa.
Yeah, M-Pesa is the poster child for this. There's like 92 other mobile payments like this in operation on the continent of Africa, but they all have similar situations where you don't have to have a bank account. You can actually store money on it and send and receive money very, very easily. And it works with feature phones. So you don't, this is not a smartphone app, although right. It also has smartphone apps. So it's very accessible to people with small amounts of money who might not be able to get loans, who might not be able to get bank accounts, who might not be near services. But if they can charge their phone up, you know, at the convenience store, they can save, withdraw, and deposit money on their phone. And it's been a revolution. And there's all kinds of things in this Fortune article about it, talking about how it's raised some business owners to become business owners and things like that. So when you hear about the mobile revolution in developing countries, this is one of the first things you'll hear people talking about.
That's really great. I love that. That's a way technology is helping people. And that makes me really excited.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the other thing that's really interesting about this is it's a native company, Safaricom, a telco, which often don't have very good reputations for helping people around the world, and a native app with M-Pesa. It's not something that was started in Silicon Valley and then ported over there because it was popular in San Francisco. This is a very Kenyan situation. Thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. All right. Bloomberg has an article about IMSI, and Twitch introduced a new moderation tool. The Twitch moderation tool that launched on Monday is called AutoMod. It uses machine learning to block inappropriate content and sends it to a human moderator for review. And you, as the streamer, can set how strict you want it to be. When it's filtering, it's another way of trying to help people keep their chat communities enjoyable for everyone. Bloomberg has that article about IMSI. IMSI is a site of former Reddit employees and founders of the Reddit Gift subreddit. Dan McComas and Jessica Moreno, who are the founders of IMSI, started the site with the idea of stopping trolls. So there are barriers to joining a community that discourages swarming and malicious off-topic posts and such. Community leaders can disallow anonymity, establish rules of decorum, and ban members who violate them. On the other end of the scale, in the Bloomberg article, they talk about Vote, started by Atif Kolo and Justin Chastain, who believe that people should be able to say or see anything as long as it's legal under U.S. law. But there is the problem of, okay, when you can see or say anything, some people may not want to be part of that community. So is it possible to make a social network without trolls? Is the right thing to do to just open up the doors and let it work itself out and say, well, you just don't go into that community if it bothers you? Or is the right thing to say, hey, we need to manage it? We need to put up some barriers. We need to keep it where only the people really interested in interacting in this community can get together.
I think we kind of talked about this a little bit maybe last week, but I think that there has been a lot of discussion about, particularly around Twitter, and whether it's a media company or a platform, and what that kind of means. Do they have any kind of responsibility for the content that exists or is published on the site? I think that it's interesting now that we're seeing a lot of new alternatives to sites like Reddit, Gab, for example, which is the I don't say alt-right, I'll just say neo-Nazi version of Twitter. That's supposed to be like a place where they can share their quote-unquote ideas without fear of retribution or being kicked off the site. And, you know, I think laying ground rules early on in the creation of your social network is really important. And I think part of the reason why Reddit and people who used to use Reddit very frequently feel kind of bummed out in a lot of ways. And that goes for the people who want to have complete freedom of speech and the people who just want to have a fun place to be able to share stories and talk to their friends. Because now they don't really know what Reddit is for, and they don't really feel like they have the freedom to say the things they want or the protections to be protected from things that they don't necessarily want to see or be around. So I think having that moderation on the ground floor and really having an idea of what kind of site or service you want to be, like when you go out into the public, is probably the most key thing that you can do now.
Yeah, I think, you know, first of all, the idea of one man's troll is another man's jokester, right? That's 4chan in a nutshell right there. Most people going into 4chan without any experience would be appalled by a lot of the behavior. But people who lived in and breathed 4chan for years understood the code. They understood the subculture and said, well, no, that's not trolling. That's just what we do. But that over there, that is trolling. And so that's one of the difficulties, is troll gets bandied about, you know, like calling someone a communist. It doesn't mean there aren't communists, and it doesn't mean there aren't trolls, but what actually is trolling has to be defined. And I think that plays exactly into what you're talking about, which is in a community, the community decides what behavior is acceptable and what isn't. So creating a place like IMSI that says, hey, this is the kind of community we're going to have, and if you want to be a member of it with these rules and this moderation, that's fine. Any community that is unmoderated is going to drift into anarchy, because anybody can jump in and start causing trouble with no consequences. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've found at Subbrilliant.com in the 90s, at TechTV.com in the early 2000s, at CNET in the mid-2000s, at Twit, and now in Diamond Club, is when you have a community that cares and has the ability to moderate itself, you tend to get a better community, a more healthy community. And we were talking in the Slack before the show, a bunch of us, about the fact that there has to be a reason why everybody's coming together. And that reason, if it's not necessarily combative, makes it a better place, because everyone says, well, you know what, we're here to talk about, in this case, Daily Tech News Show, or we're here to talk about Night Attack, and we know what that culture is. Whereas if it's Twitter, what's the topic? What's off? Nothing's off topic in Twitter.
Same with Reddit. I mean, even in the subreddits, there's still different kinds of conversations happening within the same subreddits. And you get a sense of what's going to be happening within that subreddit, but it can veer into weird places sometimes. But I think Reddit has an especially hard time because there is like a super hardcore element to it, but also forums that are about cute puppies or about, you know, therapy or about all sorts of different topics. So you have just such a broad range of different kinds of people, but the same set of guidelines. I mean, each subreddit still has its own rules and regulations. But I don't really know actually what the level of moderation that the people in the subreddits can do. If it's like full, can they ban people from the subreddits? Probably.
Yeah. In fact, sometimes there's bans that happen with people not understanding why.
Right. That's another big problem.
Spam, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Reddit is actually harder on spam than other things. And that's because it's easier to define what spam is than it is to define what trolling is. Because like I said, trolling in one subreddit may not be considered trolling in another subreddit. It's all acceptable behavior. And now that you're saying it, I think one of the challenges of Reddit is it's seen as a place itself. Right. So if I create the, you know, fuzzy knitted kittens subreddit, the folks from fuzzy knitted dogs subreddit can easily pop over and start messing with me because they like dogs instead of kittens. Whereas if I'm in Facebook, which is the same thing, it's a site like Reddit with lots of different communities, there are more barriers in place. And I think that's what IMSI is trying to go for, like making it hard for the people in one community to just wash over into another community.
And I think they've empowered their moderators a lot more. But I think, yeah, as long as the communication is happening and the users know what is expected of them, I think that's a pretty powerful motivator to keep things in a good place.
Yeah, Stoic Squirrel in our chat says, I like the Reddit model of allowing groups to moderate themselves. It does seem, though, that there's disagreement about what tools should be allowed and what banning should happen. So, and I think Twitter is the most difficult proposition, because it's just a platform for broadcasting short messages, and it could be anywhere on the internet, conceivably. Anybody could post a 140 character message anywhere on the internet. It's not hard to create, but no one would see it. The reason people see it is because it's on Twitter. So they've created this kind of strange attractor of content, and they don't want to ruin it by dividing it up. But it's also causing people to say, hey, I don't like that there's no community spirit on Twitter. There's nothing to say like you're violating the intent of this community.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's a huge problem for them.
Yeah. And it's also, I mean, Twitter is not as open as email or something like that, right? So, you know, if it was all direct messages, it might be different. But it is closed enough that it's like, hey, Twitter posts only appear on Twitter in this one site. Everybody can see them, but you have to go there to see them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, you can embed them places or whatever. Yeah, that's true. It does screenshot, but yeah.
So it feels like what we're saying is, yes, it's possible to make a social network without trolls if you limit it enough. And the big question is, how do you limit it and who does the limiting? Any community can decide to do the limiting if it wants to. My question then becomes, okay, if I go to IMSI to start my community and they have policies in place, am I worried that their policies will get more restrictive over time to where I say, well, it was just the right amount of restriction at the beginning, but now it's not? Like, I'm a big believer that you as a community should decide what the restrictions are. And that is the beauty of Reddit. But Reddit has this thin wall problem where they haven't given people the ability to isolate their communities, or some communities just haven't been very good at moderating. I mean, I think we need to say that too. Not all moderators are equally talented at moderating. It's a skill.
Right. That's absolutely true. We've been very fortunate to have great moderators in all the communities we've kind of been a part of throughout the years, and including ourselves, you know, just being present for a lot of those things. But yeah, not everybody is so lucky.
Yeah. All right, let's get to our message of the day, which comes from A. Carl Cornell, who has a blog now at carl.cornell.us. Carl says, in yesterday's episode, you mentioned a tech museum in San Jose in the context of Silicon Valley tourism. I wanted to let everyone know that there are three. The Computer History Museum is in Mountain View and has been brought up several times on the show. There's also the Tech Museum of Innovation in San Jose, across from the Convention Center. And Intel even has their own museum, part of their campus in Santa Clara. Listeners can find more info using the links that I'll put in the show notes. By the way, I think I know where all of those tourists end up going when they're done looking at the outside of corporate buildings. Peter Wells and I were talking on day six about tourists coming and then just visiting the outside of campuses. Like, there's the Google campus. There's the Netflix campus. He says, I'm part of Stanford Research Computing. I regularly hear faculty and staff complaining about tourists standing outside their windows and taking pictures of them doing their research. It's fine with me if you want to come and walk around, but please don't feed or agitate the faculty.
That's so weird.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. And honestly, I think I sometimes confuse the Computer History Museum and the Tech Museum of Innovation because I've been to both. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes I just fall into the habit of using the Computer History Museum as a shortcut for both of them. But I didn't realize that Intel had its own museum that you could come to in Santa Clara. I'm going to have to hit that up next time I'm there.
Yeah, I don't think I knew that either.
Well, thank you, Carl, for sending that along. Computerhistory.org, thetech.org for the Intel Museum. Tech is for the Museum of Innovation, and Intel.com, of course, has its own homepage for the Intel Museum. Thanks again. And thanks to everybody in chat, in email, and in our Slack for your views on community moderation. We'll keep that conversation going. Thank you, Veronica Belmont. What you got going on?
Nothing much. Just getting ready for the holidays. Swordandlaser.com, Grobot.io, VeronicaBelmont.com are the places you'll find my stuff.
Go find them. We're in the midst of recording our special episodes. Yesterday we did our predictions results episode. That'll be showing up at the end of the year, so keep an eye out for that, the last week of December. Veronica is on that predictions results episode yesterday, so thank you again for getting up at 9 in the morning to do that.
Brutal.
Thanks to everybody who supports this show, dailytechnewsshow.com/support. That includes all our patrons, including Chris Smith, Robert Monty, Mahathir Almashore, and Russ Pitts.
Russ Pitts.
Yeah. Russ Pitts even gets in on the action. Thank you, Russ. And folks like Ian Adkins, Keelan Jacobson, and Paul Malangowski, who raised their Patreon pledges. You can support us in lots of ways. Chris Simworth supported us on PayPal. Thank you very much, Chris. But you can also support us at patreon.com/DTNS. And I got a really nice note. I get these from time to time from someone who had to stop their pledge and explain that, you know, they were in some financial straits. If you're in hard financial times, don't feel bad. There's plenty of other people to pick you up. My thought is, if a couple of bucks a month isn't going to make a big difference to you and you enjoy the show, we'd love to have that couple of bucks, because enough of you doing it makes it possible for us to do the show. I've been in that situation where a couple of bucks a month makes all the difference in whether you get to buy Carl Buttig meats or actual meat when you go to the grocery store. If you're in that situation, that's okay. You don't need to support us that way. There's tons of other ways to support us. And those of you who can't afford the couple bucks, pick up those people so they don't have to eat Carl Buttig meats. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back tomorrow with Patrick Beja. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Boom.
Tight show.
Tight show.
Nice and tight. What should we call this? If you were to name this show but one name, would you call it The Kale Didn't Scan?
Just troll with it.
Or would you just troll with it?
Troll, I like just with, troll with it. Silly putty, not so silly. It's still silly. It's just silly cool.
What's Veronica's Law? Is that my parking law?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't think that was in the main show.
A tisket, an automatic basket. Science gets silly putty. 360 degrees of merit.
Yeah. I like Science call gets it, silly putty, actually, too.
You should call it Merit 360, like Anderson Cooper. I don't know why they have that. Non-Newtonian fitness.
Non-Newtonian fitness. Yeah, because it's non-Newtonian... It's a non-Newtonian fluid? Or yeah, okay.
M-Pesa means mas pesos.
Except that
I understand, but that might be kind of weird.
Yeah, because it's not being used in Mexico or Spain.
Right.
Bless you.
Ask not for whom the bell tolls; it trolls for the bell trolls.
Yeah. Bring up trolls on a show. We'll get that title.
Troll World: Live Without Limits. That's pretty funny.
One mod to rule them all. They see me trolling. They banning.
Bow to our basket overlords. Basruption.
Just troll with it is fine.
Yeah, just troll with it.
You like that? All right.
Yeah, stick a 20-inch rim on it. Call it a day.
Troll with it, baby.
Oh, I'll need...
That new house, Roger Chang.
Yes, it's new to me. It's been around for a while. Mm-hmm. It was built before I was born.
I'm living in a house that was built before I was born, too. Most houses were built before Veronica was born.
I'm old.
Your house was built before you were born, right, Veronica?
Oh, my house was built in 1910.
It's Edwardian.
Ooh, that means it came 4 years after the Great Earthquake.
Well, my house was built, the foundation was built in 1910.
Mm-hmm.
The house has been redone a few times, but it still has the original foundation.
Huh. Is it raised or is it, I won't go into it.
Or no, slab. It's not.
So it's not a raised foundation, it's a slab.
It's in a, built into a hill.
It's actually bedrock. They carved it out of.
That is literally true. That is actually true.
It's actually really smart in San Francisco to do it that way, I think.
Yeah, we don't feel any solid. Little earthquakes. We don't feel at all.
Yeah.
And we've got these huge, like redwood beams that are just like, they don't make them like they used to, guys.
Yeah.
These redwood beams are insane.
Because redwoods are expensive. They chopped them all down back in the 1900s.
Built my house with it.
Well, you know what's great about redwood is they're incredibly fire resistant. They're like, it's like oak.
I believe they're termite resistant, too.
Well, they're super dense. Yeah, they won't. Yeah. You would need a stomach of a hyena to eat through it.
So they're good not thing. Hyena resistant.
They're not hyena resistant, which is...
You know. Hyenas can eat... It turns out hyenas can eat some pretty crusty stuff because their stomach and acids they have.
Is this the cause of the great hyena influx in San Francisco right now?
Yes.
Maybe. I don't know. If you call coyotes dingo...
They're not.
They're hyenas. Pretending to be coyotes. Then they start eating your redwoods and you're like, wait a minute.
That's my tree.
Yay, people are still finding my geocache. That makes me happy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait, which one? Is that the one you set while we were at...
Yes. Yeah, not the... Remember that one we found in the drain that time?
Yes, and, like, that woman asked us what we were doing.
I was like, nothing!
Hiding drugs.
Go away. Go away, muggle.
You better not be geocaching. We're just hiding drugs. Okay. If I find out you were geocaching, though...
I'm going to steal your cache. No.
I don't think I would geocache anything. I would probably put an emergency kit together for the future. Space blankets, space food.
They dug up a time capsule somewhere recently, and it had all biodegraded. Like there was just nothing in it.
Did they get everything at Whole Foods?
I think it predated Whole Foods. It was from the 1800s. All right, Veronica.
I'll see you guys later.
Right.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, it's probably because they didn't seal it. They didn't vacuum seal it.
No. Yeah. It's probably full of Confederate money. That's what most of them from the 1800s have, the late 1800s.
Yeah, but couldn't you just trade that a one for one, at least as a souvenir? Or would you not even get that?
Not if it biodegraded into dirt.
Made out of cotton paper.
Yeah, you could wear it. Like a shirt. I remember getting Confederate money from the souvenir shop in Kentucky when I was a kid, and my sister convincing me it was real. Even though it was totally reprints. She's like, no, those are real.
I used to wonder about those coins, commemorative coins you used to sell in TV and magazines. So can I just go to a store and use this silver eagle with, you know, whatever?
Yeah, the silver dollars, the commemorative silver dollars. Yeah. Like, hey, it's a dollar, right?
Is it? I mean, can you? Can I just go in and...
No, I don't know if those are official U.S. currency or not.
Well, nowhere does it say this is a legal tender.
It must say this is legal tender for all debts, public and private, right?
Or something.
I don't know. It doesn't say that on the penny, though.
I mean, it's done by Mint, but it's not authorized by the Treasury.
Well,
so
it's by the Franklin Mint. Yeah, it's the same Mint as the Treasury uses, not necessarily by order of the Treasury. Those are two different things. They also make nice plates.
You know, I never understood those plates growing up. Now that I've met more Midwestern white people, I understand. But
my parents got me one, and I don't want to sound unappreciative. It was very sweet of them. It was a Russian Franklin Mint plate, and I kept it around for years because they bought it for me, and it was expensive, and I never got it either, I'll be honest. And I am one of those white people from the Midwest, and I still didn't understand. I'm like okay. I mean, I guess
like commemorative plates. I didn't understand. Like, so you're not supposed to eat off it?
Yeah, you're supposed to put it up on the wall. But
so why don't you just make a wall thingy?
Because it's a plate. I don't know. I don't get it either. I mean, I get it in so much as like, hey, not every piece of art has to be a flat painting. Right?
Oh, yeah,
you
can totally
have sculpture. And like, why not make a plate that you paint on and turn that into sculpture? But I don't understand how that got so popular. I'd understand it more if it was just a quirky thing that occasionally you found, but it became this huge industry.
And then what's even worse is you can't even eat off of it, even if you wanted to, because they're often colored with, at least back when they were popular, with lead-based paints and inks.
Waffle Offagus asks a very good question. He said, have you posted the topics for your underrated stories episode? He says, because if you do, I want to email in on a topic. And I told him in chat too, we're just using the emails. So if you email us on a topic, we are not guaranteed to use all the emails, but we will use one, emails for topics. We're not picking topics and then asking for emails. Maybe that would be a better, smarter way to do it, and we'd get more emails. But we've gotten lots of emails, so we're just going to go through all of those and select some topics to talk about. So I would encourage Waffleophagus and anybody else who has a topic they'd like to weigh in on to just email us.
Even if the email is, why is it totally not underrated and doesn't get deserved?
What?
Why it is totally... Oh, I'm sorry. I'm reading Waffle Off.
Daily Tech News Show.
5-chord and died.
He says, even if the email is, why it is totally not underrated and doesn't deserve headlines. Oh, okay. No. In that case, we would not use that on underrated because that would be arguing that it shouldn't be in the show and it wouldn't make it into the show. So I see why he's asking. He's like, if you're going to talk about this, I want an email that says it's not underrated. Anyway. I get it. And no, we don't have topics. You can just email after that show is done because we haven't actually selected the emails yet. He wants to dispute something that we haven't picked as a topic. I don't think we got any emails about that being underrated. The thing he's saying in chat, which is the GM Volt.
Painting.
Now I lost my place. Where am I supposed to do next? Oh yeah, upload the actual show. Is that the whole show? I should check. Daily Tech News, Veronica Belmont, how about you?
VeronicaBelmont.com.
Thank you for making this year possible. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We'll be back live starting in January, Monday. Oh, that's the wrong one. Be back live starting in January. Yep, that's not the right one. Daily Tech News Show is powered by... I'm glad I checked. Daily Tech News Show is powered by its audience. Not everyone makes predictions, but nobody ever goes back to check and just see. Okay, so that's move to trash. Daily Tech News.
Technically, yeah.
Daily Tech News Show is powered by its audience. Recode's Peter Kafka does point out that Netflix.
Oh, so.
Yeah, me too.
I'm with Veronica.
So I imported the wrong thing.
Oh no.
That's all right. Just means I have to start over. But I'm glad I checked it before I posted, or I would have accidentally posted the predictions results show.
Hummel pictures. What are Hummel pictures?
Hummels? You don't know Hummels?
Look up
Hummels. They're another collectible.
Okay, I've seen these. Oh wait, this is the footballer. Wrong Hummel.
Thanks, Seb Gons. Good to see you.
I'll be honest. I always see these at swap meets and.
So you know Hummels then. That's another one that got big.
I also see a lot of rifle
precious moments. Stuff.
Ant in Alabama collected zones of Hummel plates. Zillions. I want to see zillion as a monetary unit offered on a lottery winning. You win $10 zillion.
My mom started to get into one of them, and I can't remember now if it was Hummels or Precious Moments. I think it might have been Precious Moments. She was into miniatures. She liked miniatures. In fact, my grandma was into miniatures too. My grandma Roxy collected salt and pepper shakers.
Yeah, I know people who do that. I knew who was the EP for Screensavers and Call for Help? Renee Arricchio?
Oh, yeah. I remember Renee.
She was a fan of the snow globes.
Oh, yeah. I had a friend who collected snow globes until she got so many of them, she had to like go on a campaign to tell people, stop buying me snow globes. And then she got rid of all her snow globes. She got overwhelmed. She got snowed under.
She got snowed under by snow globes.
Yeah.
That's a lot of water. I mean, those things are heavy.
Yeah.
Like, one is okay.
She lost a bunch of things in moves except the snow globes. And then she started getting angry, I think. She's like, how did I lose these books that I really loved? And then I've got all these crazy snow globes.
Collected KKK art. That's kind of weird.
People collect all kinds of crazy things.
It's true. I used to collect computers that I wanted.
My parents collected matchbooks. You collected computers that you wanted, or are you just saying you bought computers that you wanted?
No, like I would after 10 or 12 years. I bought like a Laser 128 and a C64.
You were starting your own computer museum.
Yeah, then it just realized it's just bulky and they take up space.
They take up a lot of space. I have a TI-99 and a Commodore 64, plus most of the computers I've ever owned, and they take up a lot of space.
Now I'm going to be a hipster and just say I collect unique experiences.
There has to be a reason why everybody...
I read another article on...
I collect experiences.
I collect experience points. I only take memories with me.
Like, what was that?
I leave only footprints and take only memories.
I remember someone. I guess it's collecting, but they would always photograph themselves in the Capitol, whatever country they visited. They would take a photo of themselves in front of the Capitol or whatever, whatever the equivalent of the White House.
That's just called being a tourist.
Yeah. No, but I mean, it's always the same, but technically they're collecting those.
Collecting
moments.
The pictures of themselves. Yeah, I get it. I had a friend who took a picture of his feet everywhere he went.
Oh, I did that. I felt like an idiot later because Ken Marcus put.
Actually, I don't. Were you that friend? I thought it was someone else.
Maybe I had a couple on my desk, and then Ken Marcus put his picture of his feet on there. I was like, why? It made no sense.
I like that. There was that viral thing that went around several years back of a guy who took a picture of himself every day and then turned it into an animation over the course of a couple of years. Might have just been 1 year. I don't remember.
Well, I'm guilty of collecting data now. Like, that's my thing. Like, if I see a web page or an image of something really funny or interesting, I just save
it. You'll save it. You're a digital hoarder.
Yeah. I'm literally the guy who Seagate or Western Digital or Hitachi or Samsung have in mind when they come out with these like 8 terabyte consumer level storage drives.
Definitely.
Like, I go back and I have crap from like college. It's like, why did I write this?
Well, you're especially feeling that right now because you moved.
Yeah.
And you're seeing all of this stuff. You're like, wait, why do I still have this? I know that feeling.
If you think about it, if you had the ability to collect whatever you wanted and space was never an issue, mm-hmm. for example, if you collected shoes or cars like Jay Leno, and you had the ability store it in one spot, always have enough room for it, like a TARDIS.
Uh-huh.
More people would be collectors. They would be more hoarders.
People just don't like having things as much as others.
Well, do they not like having things because it's a hassle to move around? But if you take away that hassle, if it's no longer a burden.
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't think the only reason people don't like having things more than others is storage. I think some people I just don't care about having that stuff. Like, I don't understand people who don't keep books, but there are people who are like, no, I don't want any books. And so, yes, sometimes it's because of space, but sometimes it's like, yeah, once I'm done with a book, I don't need it anymore. So I'm curious, actually. It's a really good question. If people had infinite storage of physical objects, what kinds of people would collect things and what kinds of people would not? It's not just space. It's also management.
Well, yeah.
Takes up space in your head to think about having those things.
But think about the spin-off cottage industry you could have.
Well,
and how you could
here's a thought. If you had a transporter, if we had transporter technology, would you need to own things or could you share access to physical objects?
I would totally do that.
So like you wouldn't need to own a Commodore 64. You would just have access to a Commodore 64. And if you wanted to look at it, you press transport and wherever it's centrally stored, it transports to you and you can pull it out and play with it. And then when you're done, you send it back by transporter.
Yeah. That'd be great. I mean, that would work for me. Some people just love the whole ownership aspect.
Yeah. It's thing sharing. Maybe there's a startup in there, even without transportation, by using shipping. Amazon
thing sharing. I like that idea.
Yeah,
because
I don't want to buy this, and I don't want to go into an auction for it. I just want access. I just want to be able to check it out like a library. Shane says we do have that kind of rental, sort of, but there's not a service that's just like, hey, here's a bunch of things, and you can just like it's like eBay. Yeah. And we just have it all in a warehouse and you can have it sent to you temporarily. And then, you know, you pay a monthly fee to have access.
Well, yeah, you pay like a subscription fee and you get this one, you get this wonderful access to whatever, like Shane's wonderful weird emporium. And
yeah.
You get access to anything and you can, it's like a lending library. You get to hold on to it for like a couple of weeks. You can return it or you can renew your.
Yeah. And it's for the kind of things, it's not for use there. Yeah, we have rental for tools and stuff that you need, but it's for useless stuff.
Like, do you have an 80s party? Like, I could totally see it for parties and events.
Yeah, it's a nostalgia play. Totally. Shane's saying in all caps, I must build this emporium.
Can you imagine? That would be great. It'd be like a bunch of, you know, cardboard standees from like the 80s. For movies and stuff.
All right, JT0's got a link here called fluidmarket.com. What is this? Is this our thing? Fluid is a community sharing app that allows neighbors and peers to rent the things they don't use every day to each other. That's pretty close. So it's actually one step beyond. Instead of a central warehouse, this is the distributed version.
Yeah.
Like, I've got stuff, and if you want to borrow it, you can. But this is more useful stuff. The pitch is like, you know, a backpacking tent, a power washer, the Vive virtual reality, HTC Vive. That's interesting though. Yeah.
Total earnings. I totally have stuff people could borrow. I have a bunch of DVDs I never watch anymore. I have a bunch of, what do I have? Yeah. I dumped a bunch of stuff too. Sucks.
Yeah, Tinvex saying it's kind of like the clothing services, like Stitch Fix or Mr. Collection, where you pay to have stuff sent to you, and if you keep it, they charge you for it. But if you don't keep it, you send it back. This is interesting. All right, we're going to go work on our pitch to the VCs for that. In the meantime, you all have a lovely day, and we'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye.